I'm going to give you the
screen. You're going to start off just sharing your first and last name, and she's going to ask you the questions. And at the end of it, you're saying, I just sent a recording with the National Minority
Forum. The National Minority Quality Forum, okay.
Yeah, right here. But first, I want to hear what you have to say first, and then I'll ask the question.
Okay. Hold on, what was I going to say?
So I'm going to clip it to you because sometimes y'all put your hands away from me, y'all forget. I'm going to put it right here.
Okay. All right. Now, okay, hold on. What was I going to tell you? What we need more than anything, test kits for food allergies, where people will send off their hair or something simple like that. Like, I don't know if that's even a possibility of something y'all could come up with or create or what it, or partner with someone to do. But a lot of people in this area, they don't know much about nutrition at all. So, for example, if the oils we cook in, if all of the convenience stores and places like the Cozy Corner, like all these breakfast places, the oils that they're cooking with is vegetable oil, canola oil. If they were just to switch that over to avocado oil or another high point oil to deep fry in, it would erase probably at least half of the inflammation in this county. Because so many people, that's where they go to eat breakfast. The men who are working around here, that's where they're going to eat breakfast. That's where they go for lunch. So understanding more about the oils that we cook in.
So how would you describe just like the overall health of the native community?
I would say a lot of us are overweight, and that we really don't know a lot about wellness. People know about what goes on within, like how the last lady was talking about the doctor's office. Like, they know that typical kind of stuff, but they're not really getting, they're like, I know I have to take my blood pressure medicine now. I know I have to do, you know, whatever the doctor says, but they don't know anything about how to prevent illness. They don't know anything about food being medicine, right, obviously. But that whole preliminary part, they're not getting how to be well, stay well, do well, eat well, all of anything wellness is not here. It's like the aftermath. We're just getting the aftermath. We're not getting any prevention.
Gotcha. Okay. And what would you like outside organizations or lawmakers to understand about the needs of your community?
That they need to stop having so many meetings about the community and actually do, like take those meetings. Like, I'm a therapist, right? I've worked for almost every major entity in this county I've worked for. There's a coalition that gets together at this time. It's the Robeson County something-something coalition. All the entities are there. They meet every so often. All the resources are there, but they are not putting in the grassroots efforts that are needed, the collaboration that's needed, like to connect these entities. They're connected at that one meeting, so they're considering themselves connected, right? But they're not actually connected. They're showing up to the meeting, but when it comes to collaborate outside of that meeting, they're waiting on someone to be the front runner, to lay the groundwork, to do the stuff, and no one wants to step up to that because they already have their own jobs. In my opinion, one of the things they could do is hire somebody to actually put forth the effort that these coalitions and that these entities are wanting to do. They need to put someone in that place who's actually capable of doing something like that, right? Who's willing to go to business to business to business or community event to community event, and not just like, not saying that setting up a table and putting awareness out isn't important, but also doing demonstrations. Like people here need hands-on. They don't need papers to read because a lot of us are illiterate, right? And they're not going to. They're not going to put, like, they need to think as if every person that they come across that they're trying to help is ADHD and not think that the ADHD is BS, but to actually treat it the way you would, like a therapist would help a person with ADHD symptoms manage their life. We all need to be managing our life as if we are ADHD, and especially in this community, because a lot of us are traumatized. They need to understand the importance of trauma in this community and how that affects decision making, and that they can't just expect people to want to be healthy. There needs to be some type of incentive to be healthy. So the lawmakers need to decide how much of a stake that they want to put in the game, how much of a dog they got in the fight. Because at this time, they don't. At this time, it sounds good. It looks good, and they probably feel good when they collect their paycheck at the end of the month, or, you know, whatever, think that they're doing something for the community. But in reality, they are not reaching the people. They ain't going into the backwoods getting people. You know, they don't actually have a dog in the fight, and they need to have one. And realize that we can't just say, well, the community has experienced trauma. They need to be treating each one of these individuals as if they are a traumatized individual, because they are, and act from that place. Because if you're just talking about your quote-unquote normal, healthy, everyday person who had two parents and an extended family and community support and a great school, and all these systems around them that actually helped support and increase value and be safety nets for people. You can't look at this community or most impoverished communities that way. You have to look at them as they are traumatized individuals, and but not in a, oh, I'm so sorry for you kind of way, but in a very real, what does a person in trauma need? And Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? We can't look at self-actualization if a person does not have running water, or if they don't just have access to food, or you know, what system supports. Until they have that, those base needs, we can't look at self-actualization, right? So that's what I want them to know. Stop acting like you're doing something. Do something. All day, girl. Me too.
And that's why I really like that kind of event.
Yeah.
That's like you said, like, with all these boards, so coalitions who are, like, talking to each other.
Yeah. You know what else? You don't happen to be a social worker, do you?
Oh, great.
I think social workers are ruining mental health, because they, so for some reason in these conversations, people are looking at social workers, peer support specialists, and like behavioral techs to guide people through substance use issues, mental health issues. Social workers are trained in policy and procedure. They're trained in systems. They're trained in, you know, in sort of kind of doing grassroots efforts to a degree. Social workers have to go and get extra clinical training, whereas clinical mental health counselors, which is what licensed professional counselors are now called, they're right there and available, and they're being like produced by this school, right? but there isn't a lot of entities in the area that are using clinical mental health counselors, and they're even like, they either are not a part of the conversation, because like when I was a part of this coalition, LCAS, that was the other one, licensed clinical addiction specialist. But again, they're getting their experience from experience, which isn't helping a person when they're in the middle of their trauma right then, right there in that moment, right? And if they're not trained and equipped to deal with that person, then why are they there, right? So instead, we look at saying, well, you got, well, let's look at your coping skills. What are you doing wrong? What do you need to do? Let's set you some goals. And are you meeting those goals? Now, not saying they're going to actually help the person meet those goals or stick by them while they're trying to meet, or even help them process what they're doing while they're in the middle of not meeting the goal, right? So they're inflicting more shame, more pain, more issues, right? And re-traumatizing people instead of actually saying, like, okay, let's get someone clinical in here, and we're going to sit them down, and we're going to actually talk to them. And you know, there needs to be some, like, life coaching, like, some hand-holding, some things like that. And lawmakers and the people at the top of these entities, they got to stop thinking social workers are the solution, because they're totally taking out the entire industry of clinical mental health counselors. I mean, I'm even seeing jobs pay less to clinical mental health counselors than they are to social workers, even though they're basically, you know, the same, except what their specialized trainings are in. And I just don't, and this is no disrespect to the social work profession, but I just don't see where, and I've worked for several entities again, and I just don't see where the social workers are actually helping. Not to say they're not trying,
yeah,
right? But there is a certain level of skill and training that they don't have, that they don't get unless they go seek it out for themselves outside of school, past graduation, past licensure, all that. And to me, that's ridiculous when you're talking about a person who needs help right now in this moment.
Yeah, and I think, too, a lot of people aren't looking at, like, the whole person.
Yeah.
And their, like, conditions, especially their living conditions. Because I know I'm going to not have a very good attitude if I'm hungry.
Okay. Hangry is real.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that we have higher expectations, like clinicians are having higher expectations on the people that they're serving than they are actually holding for themselves. Like they're not exuding unconditional positive regard, but they're expecting this person to be unconditionally happy and unconditionally receptive and unconditionally, like, willing to do the program. Like, they're not allowed, like, the clinician is expecting the person on the other side of the table to not have feelings, to not be overwhelmed, to not be overstimulated, to not be,
have a lot of anxiety.
Yeah. Right. To not flip out. Whereas we need to be trained on how to help diffuse a flip out versus saying, like, it's not okay to cuss here. Let it, okay, we all cuss. Okay, you know, and if people choose not to cuss, then that's their choice, and that's wonderful. Bless them. But let people cuss. Let people cuss.
There's bigger fish to fry.
There's so much bigger fish to fry. Let people cuss. Like, if they need to say, the worst thing ever, let them say it and give them unconditional positive regard and stop acting like they should be okay when they're sitting in front of you needing treatment, needing help. And stop acting all self-righteous, saying, oh, well, I'm here to help you. Get out my face. That's how I would feel on the other side. Don't come to me all self-righteous and entitled to good feelings when I don't even get my good feelings. It's unfair. It's cruel. It's cruel. That's cruel and unusual punishment to expect someone who is traumatized and in the midst of probably active trauma at that point. And it's also hard to get into see a therapist. Even, like, I am a therapist, and when I was having my own mental health crisis, there was no therapist around here who could help me. I didn't have Medicaid. I didn't have any insurance. So I got to an agency that had IPRS funds, and so I was able to start seeing a therapist. But I told that therapist, I'm just shy of suicidality, just shy of ready to just put my car into a stop sign real quick and or the ditch. And they wanted to ask me about, like, what are my values? And taking time in the appointment to do their paperwork, their treatment plans, their assessments. There's certain questions you got to ask to begin with. I understand, but by the fourth appointment in, you know, so we're talking about, if we're doing every 2 weeks, we're talking about 2 months. I was in a crisis 2 months ago, and I've met with you four times, and we still ain't even talked about what happened two months ago. That's ridiculous. That's the problem. It's all about the therapist's therapeutic modality, like how they like to do things. It's not looking at what the client needs in that moment. Because I went in there as a crisis client. I said, I'm not okay. I need to talk to a therapist now. I need you to get me connected with one. I had to get to 211 to connect me to someone else, to an actual agency, and to get an appointment quickly. I had to call like suicide hotlines away from here. I could not get help here, and I am a therapist in this county. When I tell you, there's heavy barriers, and that's why I'm like this ain't nothing to play with. There's not enough competent providers. It's a lot of social workers at agencies because they can go and collect the salary and you know, whatever they want. They don't. It's not like supervision doesn't exist, right? But the supervision itself is, let's take a snippet, right? It's not like we've got trained professionals sitting in with the people who are still learning and saying, okay, what did you catch when she said this? What did you see when they did that? Did you see that body language? None of that is being done here. So I'll give you an example. The girl knew, this woman who was my therapist knew that I was a therapist. And one of the requirements for being in individual therapy was I had to come to a group therapy once a month. I did not want that. But if it's a requirement, it's a requirement. So I go. And she looks at me in the middle. It's me and one other girl. She looks at me in the middle of the session. And she says, Michaela, what would you tell somebody in this situation? Bitch, I'm here for therapy. So instead of her actually, I guess, therapizing us, right, I'm now running the session. Because she knew that I was a competent therapist. So agencies no longer need to be privatized. Lawmakers. Lawmakers, you need to understand, therapy doesn't need to be privatized. Social workers need more specialized training, and there needs to be a better transition process from the classroom to real life. And I understand that there are internships, but the internships are the same. The therapists are just getting the interns to write their assessments, and then they check them and might correct them a little bit. So we're training people on paperwork. We're not training people on how to connect to people. We've lost all intimacy since COVID. And so the people who are in the trenches, they're smarter than the therapists. They're better therapists than the clinically trained therapists. Yeah. Lawmakers. So, yeah. So that's the barriers. The barriers to, there's plenty of them around, but if you don't have Medicaid, it gets even more complicated. There is IPRS funds that help, but most people don't know what IPRS funds are, so they don't know that they can go get therapy even though they don't have insurance.
So where are people getting most of their like health related information?
TikTok, YouTube, Google, Brother Billy, you know, not Brother Billy. tables like that, and but they're not reading the materials, and the tables are, yeah, we're just here to spread awareness. They're aware. Okay, the people are aware that health issues exist, heart issues exist, mental health issues exist, but they're getting from like spiritual circles, stuff in the religious communities.
So would they like be more receptive to listening to like their pastor or something like that? Do you feel like that would be the case?
For a certain section of the population, sure. But I think less and less people are going to church. And they want to go to church for God. You know, they don't want to go to church to be taught to. You know, they want to go to church to be taught spiritual lessons. And it's not like that wouldn't be a good place, but like, what do you achieve by bringing in an awareness booth to the church, right? People are just going to stop by, they're going to look, they're going to take, they want the free goodies, and then they're going to go on about their business and never think of you ever again. How effective of an intervention is that, right? There are no effective interventions in this area. None. I would say none. Now, you know, stop the pain. I think they're a great resource because they have brought forward resources. Like one girl named Asa created a packet of resources saying, you know, in the whole entire state, maybe a little bit in South Carolina too, here's all the recovery centers. Here's all the, hi there. Here's all the recovery centers. Here is the, all the law enforcement, all the, you know, just different types of services. That was super helpful. And then they sent it out to all the entities. They're a part of the coalition. They do meetings. So Stop the Pain is probably the closest thing to a grassroots effort that is actually being effective at all. And I guess PAWS, PAWS, they're the, I guess, official entity that Stop the Pain is working with or through now. And
do you think
it would be better to go through somewhere like them.
Fairs are helpful, like for the folks who don't have like health insurance or something, and the health fair or something with like the free screenings and the testing and things. Do you think these kind of events are helpful?
There are some. There are some resources that a small part of the population would be interested in getting, especially if it's some free stuff, right? Like a blood pressure cuff, right? People might just check their blood pressure more if they just so happen to have a blood pressure cuff sitting by. So something like that, sure. But again, the health fairs, they are all about awareness. And I know the first step to anything is awareness, right? But like, I think we're past awareness, and there's very few front runners that are going past awareness. If it was a like food is medicine type of health fair, where it's like preventative stuff, alternative stuff, like not just going straight to the doctor, like your MD, but maybe including naturopaths. You know, like this community, for example, 50, 70 years ago, maybe not even 70, just in the 1950s, right? People around here didn't have, you know, money like that to go to the doctor unless it was like fatal or an emergency. If they had something like the common cold or, you know, this, that, or the third, they were going to their local healers. There's a book on the environmental desk over there, and it's sitting like right on the corner. It's green around the corner. If you read just the beginning of that, it's basically about herbal remedies that were common in this area, created by local healers, or they were obviously taught by someone, right? And you know, the community, we had people within the community who would do this, that, or the third, who knew how to do this, who knew how to heal that with herbal remedies. So if you had, you know, a table like that down there, you know, at a health fair, that could be helpful.
Do people are still like receptive to like kind of alternative holistic?
They prefer it. Holistic medicine would be a better way to go around here. Like, for example, he has these little plant-seeded paper flowers and watch wildflowers grow. So there's seeds inside of this piece of paper. It's called, he called it a wallflower. And you can set it on the wall or set it somewhere, and it will actually grow. Yeah, like I'll get you some of these, girl. And he also gave out seeds for people to grow. So like doing things that will help people get more healthy food in their homes, like teaching them how to grow broccoli sprouts, which takes nothing but a jar, and sitting them on the windowsill at a 45 degree angle. You can grow cucumbers inside of your house using a pot and a stick. You know, learning stuff like that to help. The biggest education that people could do around here that would improve all of these diseases and their mental health would be food. Period. Food. So if we want to do a food health fair, 100%. Especially with some free tastings all over the place, 100%. The whole community's coming, honey. They're on the way. They'll be here in 15.
That's a good idea.
I thought it up myself. Like I had never even thought of that before till just now. So I'm so happy to be having this conversation with you.
That's a good idea.
A food health fair. Because I'm convinced healthy desserts are the solution to the world's problems. It would help with weight management, obesity, depression, disease within the healing is like eating healthy cheesecake made out of cashews. You can eat the whole thing and you're the better for it. Now there's no more indulging, so there's no more shaming yourself for eating sweets, and you just got to make them in a healthy way. That's it. You know, so that's my story and I'm sticking to it, lawmakers.
Do it.
Couldn't help myself.
Well, thank you so much.
You're very well.